This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning, how are you?
Boker Tov, there are so many little snippets that I want to share with listeners this morning, but I feel obliged to start with the one that surrounds the speech that was made by the Hezbollah chief, Naim Qassem, who made this speech on Friday. And the gist of all of the multitude of words that come out, it just seems like they've got more words than concepts to discuss. It was a long, rambling speech that really just focused on the fact that Hezbollah will not allow anybody to disarm them. This was the main crux of the speech, because we do know that the Lebanese president, the new Lebanese president, Joseph Fayoun, has really gone about trying to disarm Hezbollah and to ensure that the only arms that are available in Lebanon are really at the disposal of the Lebanese army. So the leader of Hezbollah, Qassem, went on about nobody will disarm Hezbollah, and in particular that the Americans will not have control over Lebanon. And there was a response. Some of that speech was tweeted on X, was translated into English and was tweeted on X. And there was a response to some of that translation by the US Deputy Special Envoy for Middle East. This is Morgan Ortegas, who has been involved in dealing with Lebanon, representing the U.S. administration in Lebanon. She's traveled backwards and forwards to Beirut quite a few times. And she responded on X to this translation with one word. And her word was yawn. That's all she wrote, yawn, to the speech. So for me, the quote of the day definitely is yawn from Morgan Ortegas. I mean, there could not be a word that just says it more accurately than that. And it just really disarmed everything that Naim Qassem had to say in that long, rambling speech. And while we're already talking about US administration officials, it's very fascinating for me to see that a person has been nominated to be the head of the Iran and Israel desk at the National Security Council in the U.S. administration. It's a little conflicting for me that you've got the same person who's head of the Iran and Israel desk, but then you see that the person who's been nominated to this position is Merav Keren, and Merav Keren is somebody who in her past has worked for the Israeli Ministry of Defense. She was born in Haifa, and she's now part of the U.S. administration at the National Security Council as the head of the Israel and Iran desk, which is very fascinating indeed.
Really,
we saw yesterday that the Pope passed away, and of course, condolences to the Catholic listeners, who obviously will be mourning the death of the Pope. He didn't look very well on Sunday when he did his little trip around St. Peter's Square for Easter, I have to say.
And he met J.D. Vance. I mean, I see somebody saying they want J.D. Vance to visit their mother-in-law.
yes, indeed. Well, he's gone to India now, so let's see what happens next. The Pope didn't look very well on Sunday. We know he's not been very well. We have a slightly ambivalent sort of memory of the Pope. I know that he met with some of the hostages who'd been released, and he did have some statements to make. But he didn't really come across as being a great supporter of Israel. And on the contrary, he was quite vocal about the war and about Palestinians and about things that were going on in Gaza. So we don't have a very clear sort of fond memory of the Pope, and in particular in his final few months and years when this war has been going on, and we didn't feel that he was fully supporting it. But my attention was drawn to the British Board of Deputies and members of the British Board of Deputies who published this open letter in the Financial Times saying that, and I quote, as British Jews, they could no longer stay silent on the war. And then they went ahead to really criticize Israeli government actions and express deep concern for Israel's future. Now, this was 36 members of, I think, 200 or so who make up the British Board of Deputies. And this is a massive discussion for me, Howard, and I know that maybe now's not the time to do it. But for me, I had this very, very negative kind of reaction to this.
As do I.
And I thought to myself, and then I thought to myself, well, why am I reacting? Why have I got anything to say about it? Why do I feel a judgment towards that particular statement? Because their action is not going to harm Israel here. So as far as Israel is concerned, we're just going about our business as if though that never really happened. But I remember having a very feisty discussion a few years ago with Howard Saxteen, where we discussed the fact that he was of the view that I demand, or that I feel that Jews in the diaspora support Israel almost no matter what. And we had this debate on air, which went on for quite some time, where I denied that I'm demanding people to support Israel. But I think that there is a line that gets crossed where criticizing Israel becomes supporting our enemies. I think there is a line
somewhere. And certainly you'll be used for that, and that's the problem. And that's the biggest problem, is it does weaken it, because we see the Natura Carta since the beginning of the war being shown as though they are hundreds of thousands of Jews who don't support the state of Israel. We know that's not true, but they become the poster children, and this is what will happen here. And that does damage, because we don't have an honest media, and that's the problem.
So I'd just like to reiterate that I think that Jews in the diaspora have very much the right, as all of us do, to criticize the Israeli government and their actions. And we all have our different views on that, and that's fine. But there are two questions for me, the first of which is, at what point, does that cross over to support our enemies? And the second question is, how does it affect you in the diaspora when you make those statements? How does it affect your own community? When there is a split within the community and some are saying something as Jews, when we hear this term as Jews, we know what's coming next, right? So when you make those statements, how does that affect your own local community and being Jewish in your own local community and the strength that you may have? And that, for me, is a question that, you know, I kind of plant with you, because that's something that you guys need to think about. And I'm not sure if this is a debate that's being held locally. But, I encourage listeners to get involved, and particularly people who have criticisms towards the state of Israel and towards actions that Israel has taken. How do you go about expressing those, and what do you think the right way to do things is? Because I think there is very much a debate to be held about this.
Well, in fact, as you say that, Mike Luber, one of our listeners, has sent an article in Business News, and it's exactly that. A right of reply: protesters reject Zionism at Pick and Pay, call for an end to Israeli products. There's always Jews, so-called Jews, that are going to be, and they might even be Jewish, they might not be in the next generation, but they might be Jewish now, and that's what they do, is they parade, and I don't know this particular article, it's just been sent to me, it's so often that you see this, that the Jews for Free Palestine and all of these will be quoted, and I think that is exactly the problem. and the concern here. So I'd love your thoughts. 061-895-1019. It is a difficult conversation, and it is it's a complex one that we would love to try and figure out. Let's talk about some of the news. The head of Shin Bet, Ronen Bar, has submitted an affidavit to the court regarding government's decision to replace him. What is the basis now of his argument?
So I think this goes back now to some of the history about the Shin Bet and some of the oversight of the Shin Bet and who's responsible for whom, who has the right to do what under Israeli law. And the point about the Shin Bet is that they have a very, very difficult task in maintaining Israel's security and having to undertake certain actions in order to maintain Israel's security. And the question is, where do we draw the line around what they are and they are not allowed to do? And it goes back to the Landau Commission, which investigated some of the tactics that were being used by the Shin Bet to extract information and to enforce Israel's security. And now we have this thing called a Shin Bet law, which limits to some degree the actions that the Shin Bet can take and how they can go about their business, what's okay and what's not okay, what's humanitarian and non-humanitarian in their application of protecting Israel's security. But the Shin Bet has another very controversial side to it, which is that in the Shin Bet law is entrenched the right of the head of the Shin Bet to oppose an instruction that is given by the prime minister, who is really the person who is authorized to give orders to the Shin Bet. But the head of the Shin Bet is allowed to say no to the prime minister according to the law if he feels that the prime minister is using the Shin Bet for political purposes and potentially for trying to exercise the Shin Bet's capabilities against political rivals. And that is entrenched in the law of the Shin Bet. And that is what has come up in the affidavit that Ronen Bar has made to the court, where he said that the prime minister called upon him to use the facilities of the Shin Bet to investigate people who are opposed to the government, people who had been demonstrating, and that he was exercising his right under the law of the Shin Bet to say no to those things. And as a result of that, the prime minister decided to dismiss him. Within all of that, of course, is the Qatar Gate story and the fact that the Shin Bet has been called upon to investigate the Qatar Gate story, the prime minister being implicated in that, and therefore the right of the head of the Shin Bet to say no under the law is somewhat undermined by the right of the prime minister to fire the head of the Shin Bet, or the right of the government to fire the head of the Shin Bet. And this is the moment that it has to go to court, because there is an inherent conflict within the Shin Bet law, which says on the one hand that the government and the prime minister are entitled to hire and fire the head of the Shin Bet. On the other hand, the head of the Shin Bet is entitled to say no if he feels that the Shin Bet is being used for purposes which it wasn't set up for, i.e. political means in Israel. And so that is where the real conflict in the Shin Bet law potentially existed, and which has now come out in full force. And there is this obvious conflict which has been referred to the court. And that is really the crux of what Ronen Bar has said in his affidavit. He's exercised this right under the Shin Bet law to say no, and he feels that as a result of that, the prime minister has sought his dismissal as head of the Shin Bet. It's a highly complex story. There is a lot of history in the Shin Bet about using the Shin Bet. In fact, it was classic that when Menachem Begin joined the government in 1967 for the government of national unity during the Six-Day War, he apparently came in to, I think it was Issacharel at the time, who was the head of the Shin Bet, and he said to him, "I know that the government has been using you to eavesdrop on me and to spy on us and to listen to our conversations." He came out saying, "I know that you guys are doing that." And yet when Menachem Begin took office in 1977, when the Likud was elected, he did not change out the head of the Shin Bet. He said, you are a professional organization, a professional person, and you will continue in your job in the new government. So it's very interesting that this conflict within the Shin Bet is not new. It goes back many, many years, even from to the days of Ben-Gurion, and has come out in a number of different ways. It's very, very complicated indeed. And this will obviously go to the courts. My prediction is that Ronen Bar will be replaced as the head of the Shin Bet, but this is a big issue within Israeli society and within our political sphere.
What about this issue that the Minister of Finance, Smotrich, made the statement that the hostages are not Israel's main priority? Does that indicate that they aren't?
Well, according to Smotrich, he feels that Israel's main priority in this war is the defeat of Hamas. That's first and foremost what this war is about. And so therefore, by implication, according to the statement that he made, if it so happens that the hostages need to be sacrificed in the interests of defeating Hamas, that's a price that he feels the government should be willing to pay. Now, this does highlight a massive, massive split within Israeli society about what we are doing and how we are going about things, and potentially a split within world opinion, within the Jewish world and within the non-Jewish world, about what exactly Israel is doing at the moment with this war and what the main priorities are. And it's interesting that a recent poll that had some 20,000 participants indicated that most Israelis, or at least most of those people who participated in that poll, want this war to continue, even though the hostage families are saying, stop the war in order to bring the hostages home. Now, I don't know whether stopping the war equals bringing the hostages home. That, for me, is not an absolutely clear link. Because I think that when we did eventually stop the war and the hostages did come home as part of a negotiated settlement, at some point that ran dry and the war continued to be stopped while there were no hostages coming home. And so the question is, what do you do next? How do you handle that situation where there is no war and there are no return of hostages, and so we are achieving nothing in the process? But the hostage families and the demonstrators in Tel Aviv continue to believe that waging this war is equivalent almost to sacrificing hostages, or at least preventing a hostage release from coming about. I'm not sure in my own mind that those things are absolutely linked, but of course Smotrich's comments are a little disparaging, even if that's what he truly believes, and even if that's what the government truly believes, to say that out in public to hostage families whose loved ones are still languishing in Gaza all this time doesn't seem to be the most sensible thing to do. But again, this is something which I'm sure our listeners will have their views on. It's a highly complicated story, another highly complicated story for the Jewish world to have to confront.
Well, there don't seem to be any simple ones right now. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, that is where we leave it. So you can catch Anthony tomorrow morning with the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.